There's a thousand further women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to the Katz Report on the radio. This is John Katz-Lamidas. I write the Katz Report in the Las Vegas Sun, Las Vegas Weekly Magazine. I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group, including The Sunday, which comes out on the Sunday, except on the occasions it comes out on the Saturday and once in a while on the Monday. Sitting with me now are two entertainers of prominence in Las Vegas and beyond. He's a singer-songwriter, and she's a dancer who came to fame on Dancing with the Stars, the national TV show. They make their home in Las Vegas and are no strangers to anybody who pays attention to entertainment in this city. My friends, Frankie Moreno and Lacey Schwimmer, welcome back to the studio.
Hey. Well, thanks.
You both have been in here before, but not together, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, first time.
Yeah. Wait, Lacey came in when I think that's when I actually met
that
you.
That was our first time ever meeting. Yeah. It was years ago, yeah.
I remember that really well. It was the four of you. It was... it was you, it was
Sabrina
Bryan,
Joey Fatone, and Carson. Yeah.
Right. No, it wasn't Carson. Who was it? Kyle Massey.
Kyle Massey.
It was Kyle Massey.
There it is.
Who was so proud of his Twitter feed.
Oh,
remember
yeah,
that?
I know.
He was all proud of it. So
and now he's all proud that he follows Justin Bieber and their friends, so...
Wow.
You know.
Wow. Well, when your high school guidance counselor says that's a good idea for your career... There you have it. Yeah, I remember reading his Twitter feed live that day, and it was like, oh, yo, y'all, I'm leaving the gym.
Oh, yeah, his
yo,
gym.
Yo, y'all, I'm at this bar, and he's only like 20 years old.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that was a long time ago, and I can't remember the date, and I'm not even sure that's verified. Anyway, so welcome back, you guys. And one thing about you two is you travel the globe, and I know everybody knows who's read me. I've been around the world with Frankie. But you've been just this year all over the world, Frankie. What spot check some of the places you visited this year.
We left the Stratosphere. We stopped our headlining show there a year ago, or just over. A year ago,
right?
December. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right before Christmas, so just over a year. And we were going to move right into another room at that point, was the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided let's take some time and do a couple of these little tours. Well, the tours ended up becoming cooler and more mm-hmm. fun, and then the room things started getting sketchy, so we toured. So this whole year, in the last 5 months, we've done like 8 countries and 40 cities.
Yeah, we've been in 8 countries. It's been a lot.
Have you traveled that much before all this happened?
No, no. I mean, I have traveled, but definitely not that much.
This is like, yeah.
It's a lot.
This was a slow one for me. We used to travel. We used to go every 3 weeks to a different country to do something. I mean, you've been on lots of those.
I mean, you've been to like 20 countries since the last time I've been out of the country. So
this was a lot of work. I mean, this one was more, you know, we show up and we play, and then we go to another city and we play, and a lot for like the LVCVA.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go out and like represent Vegas, and
they kind of recruited you to be in the spokesman and in the lineup of
this
is what you can see in Las Vegas if you come here and spend money.
Yeah.
42 million visitors here.
Exactly.
You got to sell them somehow. Yeah. What are some of the favorite places you guys have been?
I mean, oh gosh. Really... Australia was wonderful.
Australia is one of those ones. I had been before, and the whole band had never been, and she'd never been. And Australia's cool because you wouldn't normally like just go there because it's so far.
Right.
It's expensive to get
there.
It's a
hell of a long flight.
If you have 2 weeks off and you're like, hey, let's go travel, as much as you want to go to Australia, you're probably not going to pick that. You're going to pick Cabo or Hawaii, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, we also did Korea and Japan almost back to back, and that was really awesome too.
These were all performance.
All performance based, yeah.
Where did you guys play in Australia?
In Australia, we played in Sydney, and what was the weird, not weird?
Darwin.
Darwin.
Yeah, it was the Northern Territory.
For Darwin Cup, which is right at the tip top, opposite of, I mean, it's 6 hours from Sydney
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
How were you received over there or down
there?
Oh my
gosh, it was insane.
It was probably one of the biggest things we'd done because they were giving me radio play out there 2 months prior.
Okay.
And so we went out there. There was about, how many people?
2,000?
Yeah.
2,000, 3,000?
2,000, 3,000 people. Not crazy, but...
the energy was insane.
But they all thought, you know, because I was on the radios, I mean, they all came out thinking like, we might as well have been Bruno Mars or something. They knew every song. They knew the words to Cry Baby.
All original.
All original. They knew every song to Cry Baby, Angel Town, biggest fan. They were singing along. It was crazy.
They were doing all the dance moves, too. They were like following you guys.
They clearly seen the videos.
That's good, because sometimes even you don't know the words to the song.
Yeah. I just hold the mic out whenever I don't. That's why we do originals, so I don't have to, memorize the correct words. Yeah. I'm rewriting it.
That's like the Chris Phillips method, except he doesn't write songs. I love Chris, but hey, lyrics are not a strong suit. Just keep the high legs kick coming.
I go more with the silver than the gold, though, the rings.
Right? So, so you get through this, and was there really an end game for you guys coming through all this, or were you just kind of going place to place?
Honestly, leaving the Strat, the goal was to go right into a room. Mm-hmm. And we had a room.
Well, where were you looking when you were leaving?
When we were first leaving, we were going straight over to Caesars.
Okay.
And then Caesars turned into where we're going to go start at the Rio.
Uh-huh. You're talking about Caesars Palace.
Caesars Palace itself. But there wasn't a room. Mm-hmm. So there was talk of like redesigning a new room.
Yeah, there's been talk about that over at Caesars for a while, about creating something that would be their version of the Circus Maximus.
Exactly.
They pulled apart.
Mm-hmm. That's what we were going to do. And so like kind of while we were discussing it, it was just taking a long time. And in the meantime, I had to work. So we started taking, I didn't want to play in town because if I started playing back at bars or, lounges – mm-hmm. Well, then what, and
hard to go back in that direction.
You can't. Mm-hmm. So I just figured, well, let's go to Japan. So we started doing that.
Play a lounge in Japan.
As we were in Vienna.
That.
Yeah, exactly. No, as we were doing that, it just turned into one of those deals that like we were making a lot of money and we were playing a lot and getting good exposure. So it was just kind of like I didn't want to just end that abruptly. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, the things with, we went over to Rio, we looked at that, and it kind of was all lingering there, but nothing was solid. So we just kind of said, well, let's just take a little time mm-hmm. and revamp the whole show. Let's rethink what we want to do. Because when I play again, at this point, it had been 5-6 months that we were gone. So we go, why don't we give it as long as we can before we lose steam in Vegas, mm-hmm. and then come back with something 10 times stronger than what we had. And in the meantime, Myron Martin from the Smith Center came up and he says, hey, why don't you do some shows here?
Yeah.
And so I went in and I looked at the Cabaret Jazz. I'm like, well, how do we do what we've been doing at the Stratosphere with all our big show and lights? How do we do that here? He goes, well, just do it by yourself.
I remember taking Myron to your show at the Stratosphere and him gauging that room and thinking about how you would work in this.
That's right.
Out loud.
You brought him there.
He was thinking about this out loud and saying, and then he was counting, heads and doing what he does.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you think?
I think he was sitting next to Vinnie Paul that night.
He was sitting next to Vinnie Paul.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yeah. As we say, what could possibly go wrong? But he met Vinnie Paul.
Well, that's
the Marino crowd for you. Yeah.
It's a
Josh
mix.
Bell, Vinnie Paul, Carrot Top.
Yeah, it's a strange
Myron mix. Martin.
But Myron said, why don't you just do like a solo thing? And then we said, well, if I'm going to do it, let's bring in the whole band. And then we ended up bringing in, Lacey would come up and dance. Mm-hmm. Lacey started singing a bunch at the show.
Yeah, right.
Well, you made me sing, but it wasn't my choice.
There was
no
room for her to dance, so we made her sing.
There was a guy who danced in her place one night who was kind of dressed like a redneck.
I remember that. It was a country night.
Who was that guy?
I don't know, some drunk guy.
I don't know how he got in. He was absurdly off rhythm.
Is that the guy that kicked the beach ball out into the crowd?
No, actually, that was your brother. But
broke all the glasses.
He kicked your brother out in the crowd. No, there were two beach balls that night, weren't there? Were there multiple beach balls?
There were beach balls going around, and they were falling down and breaking people's glasses.
Champagne glasses.
Yeah, it was a couple hundred dollars worth of.
They weren't thrilled.
Now this was in the run of shows. What you're doing were all tribute sort of shows.
Well, that's what he said. Come and do your own thing. And I said, well, why don't we do something different? Why don't we do something that like hasn't been done in the room? And let's do a different show each week. Now when you start putting that together, how do you format that? So he said, why don't we just tribute a different artist each week, and
or genre.
Mm-hmm. Or genre. Yeah, we did a country night, swing mm-hmm. night, whatever. And we just built that, and each week, so we did, so far we're up to like, 37, 38 shows.
Yeah.
We've only repeated a couple songs, mm-hmm. just a couple of the originals just because we wanted to. But
right, it's a different show 40, every time.
40 shows almost.
No charts.
15 songs a show, no charts, hundreds of songs that we learned. It's insane.
No charts, folks, means no sheet music on stage to look at while you're playing.
And no cheat sheets.
So difficult. Oh, man, is that difficult. Musicians will tell you that is very hard to memorize that kind of music.
Especially weekly.
Every week, yeah. We're going to take a quick break here, guys, and let Josh Bell flay a couple of movies. And then we're going to come back with Frankie Moreno and Lacey Schwimmer. This is John Katsulamidas. Stick around. I know we will.
I think you're extraordinary.
Why?
I don't know yet. It's just obvious to me that you are.
Those are the voices of David Thewlis and Jennifer Jason Leigh in the Oscar-nominated Anomalisa, opening exclusively at AMC Town Square. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. Charlie Kaufman's strange, downbeat, stop-motion animated film explores the drudgery of everyday life via a middle-aged customer service expert who hears the same voice, that of actor Tom Noonan, coming out of nearly everyone around him. The animation is beautifully detailed, but the story is a dull and mundane examination of the dull and mundane. I give Anomalisa 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening exclusively at Town Square this week are two under-the-radar releases. The Chinese drama Ip Man 3, Donnie Yen's third movie as legendary real-life martial arts master Ip Man, pits him against a group of cartoonish gangsters led by a nefarious American played by Mike Tyson, of all people. The story is silly and poorly constructed, and the sleek, exciting fight scenes can't quite make up for the clumsy structure. I give Ip Man 3 2.5 stars out of 5. A troubled Hollywood star played by Garrett Hedlund and a psychopathic drifter played by Oscar Isaac face off in the ludicrous existential thriller Mojave.
The great adventure. What's that?
Death.
The two brooding men spout philosophical nonsense at each other, but their actual conflict remains mostly inscrutable. There are no twists or reveals, just two self-absorbed idiots talking each other to death. I give Mojave 1.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. John Katzelmeadis here on the Katz Report on the radio with Frankie Moreno and Lacey Schwimmer talking about the Cabaret Jazz Experience. You're going to be playing dates for monthly.
We finished our run several times. We keep upping. So we did one last leg. Mm-hmm. I keep getting scared, like we talked about. I keep getting scared to keep upping it because we've sold out every single show.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm afraid mm-hmm. to keep booking shows because now it's like, you know, you're going to get one that's going to be 50 tickets left to be like, ah.
Who are you going to do? Who are you going to do?
Even though it's great, even though it's, you know, I'm worried that we won't sell a full table or something like that and we can't
but
call
can
it sold out.
Can you continue to do a different theme every week on existing material? Like, if you learned all these songs, now you can mix them up and mash them and do it. So you're not just doing a Frankie Marino show each time. You'll be doing a country show, and then you can slot that into an Elvis show and mix and puzzle them in that way.
No, we'll keep it fresh. I mean
there's, it's entertaining.
I've been wanting to do. We talked about the Huey Lewis thing for a long time.
Lewis night.
I love Huey Lewis.
Weren't we at dinner and I was saying no to this, and both of you guys were like,
I think you're still saying
she didn't even know who Huey Lewis was.
Well, I was born in '88. I'm sorry.
Back to the Future.
Again, before Defies my time. I've seen it. Yes.
Heard of Frank Sinatra.
Yeah,
Ghostbusters, okay. They stole the theme.
Whatever,
of
whatever, guys. You bring your members only jackets and mullets and dance a Huey.
No,
Lewis.
But I think
we'll do
Jeff mullets. I think
who has a mullet?
I think the you know, that would be a cool night. You know, there's so many we haven't done.
There's an infinite number of genres.
It never could end.
But there's a finite ability to pull them off. If you're doing, let's say, 4 or 5 nights a week somewhere else and focusing on that.
Oh, you mean switching the show if we were in a room?
Let's say you're doing this monthly. Yeah, now we know you're going to be going somewhere. I mean, somewhere. I'll just repeat what you said from the stage. And Myron said from the stage, some stupid contract somewhere. As Myron Martin said from the stage. We'll put it in his hand. Stupid money somewhere. But Frankie always has a home at the Smith Center.
Well, let's just say
so your
let's
home
just
at the Smith Center is going to be part of a greater schedule somewhere mm-hmm. else.
Yeah. So what we're going to do? We've got, I think, like five or six more shows at the Smith Center.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, I don't know the dates. We're doing one this coming Tuesday, February 1st, February 16th, I believe, and a couple
you're doing
in March.
One 26th January? Is that a date for you?
Yeah,
did you
Tuesday?
Say that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, okay. I'm there. So we're doing that, and then that ends at the end of March, which at that point, if we were to... have some great news about a new venue that we're starting.
That would be the time.
That yeah.
All right,
if we were to have that, I would tell people in mid-February, where it would be if it was to happen.
Mid-February of this year.
Yeah.
All right, we'll reel off the dates and match your timeline here. This is the Cabaret Jazz schedule. 8 p.m. shows January 26th, which is Tuesday.
Yeah.
February 1st. February 16th, March 1st, birthday, March 8th, March 22nd, and March 29th. Those are booked.
Those
you can
are,
buy tickets to those shows.
Those That's shows are now Marino booked. Schedule. You can buy tickets. And then after that is something very exciting.
Okay. Now.
Per se.
Right. Per se. Well, I know you guys have been working on something. And that we know. Now, I don't know how much you can talk about what you might be putting on stage. Let's forget the wear of it all. Let's just take the wear off the table. But what kind of vibe are you after? And Lacey, are you going to be in it? Are you going to be part of this?
Yeah,
year?
I'm going to be full time.
If we were to do something, she would probably be full time.
Now, if you were to be doing something,
yes.
What would you be wearing?
She may be wearing fringe.
Aha. I may be wearing costumes.
So that might be dancing.
It's dancing for sure, but also choreography and staging for his whole band and helping with creative. And all that.
So. Yeah, so we basically, I mean, we do what we do. And what is that? I don't know. I mean, we mix so many things together. People call it all, some people have said it's country. Some people have said it's, I'm a little bit country, I'm a little bit rock and roll. It's blues, it's jazz. But, you know, my producer, Pat Thrall, is calling it soul pop or modern retro, you know.
Soul pop, modern retro, fusion. Fusion in there. Yeah. Pat Thrall is the great guitarist whose wife Zoe operates the studio at the Palms. For those of you not initiated, one of the great studio venues anywhere. Yeah. Everybody records in that place.
Oh, everybody.
And the Thralls are very good people and very instrumental, literally, in their success. Here,
They're the best people. And Pat plays guitar on all my records. So we're doing that and we're working together. So obviously, wherever we may go or what we may do is going to embody what we already do. You know what I mean? It's not like we're going to just do something that's totally, all of a sudden I'm doing a, you know,
it's not different.
Acrobatic
it's not
show.
Different in any way, but it's definitely, I think, amplified.
We have themed, if we were to do it, I would probably theme out something really strong and go with that theme, but I would want to magnify the show in a Vegas sense that has not been done since an Elvis or Frank Sinatra. Right.
You're all about original ideas, original music, original themes.
Yeah.
You know, breaking the barriers, thinking all the cliches, thinking out of the box. Having a rotating schedule of shows like what you did at the Stratosphere, for example, do you feel a little, are you fighting the constriction that might present?
Yeah.
I mean, how much original music can you be able to do in a show that's on the strip, for example?
Well, that's the beauty with the original music is I write a song every other day, so I could just substitute.
So you'll do that, though?
Yeah, I won't do that regularly because, I mean, we might be working a lot if we were to be in this position. But, I mean, doing the original music is a tricky thing because, you know, we write it very commercial. So you hear it and it sounds commercial. It sounds like something you know by the second chorus.
Mm-hmm.
The scary thing about that for me is, like, once people know it, they want to hear it all the time. It's just a song I wrote that day.
That's the curse of the hit. Yeah.
It's a page. It's a page in your diary, and they go, "Hey, read us June 12th, 2013 again." It's like,
it is what every artist struggles with. The Bare Naked Ladies have a song called "My Greatest Hit" where they talk all about that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, it's on every compilation. I sing it every show. It's the Rent song. It's the Riot song.
Yeah.
If I don't play it, it's going to be a riot, you know?
However, I'm way more into having to play something that I wrote and felt and lived and experienced than having to play something somebody else felt, right? Like, it's like telling a story to somebody or telling a joke. I'd rather tell a story to you of a place that I've been and something I've done than something I heard someone else do.
It's the difference between a performer and an artist, right? Someone who enacts art.
That's been a tricky thing. And it's like what Lacey does with the choreography, too. Like, she performs it. But she also creates
exactly.
The same concept.
Yeah, I've talked about this too. Like when you're being directed to do steps, that's one thing. But when you're doing the directing and doing the steps, that's a whole different thing. Now, and I know that this happened kind of concurrently when Lacey stepped into the city and was in Dancing with the Stars stage show, and you saw started.
She came in like a wrecking ball.
Came in, and then there was a lot of Bruno Mars happening at that time and that kind of stuff. And your stage show changed dramatically in that period of time when you were on about the time you were on Dancing with the Stars.
We did Dancing with the Stars, and directly after that, I think is when we really started putting choreography and staging into his band.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you know, you see my band at least, what, 5-6 times? No, I mean,
I
we
still see them. It was not on stage.
The band has the band has evolved in so many ways over the years. I mean, we used to play bars every night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you do now compared to the
it's a different thing.
It's a completely different thing.
And so originally, it came into a thing when we ended up going into the showroom situation. It was like, you know, hey everybody, wear black, and you stand there and you stand there. That's all it was, you know. And we did the show, and it was great. Mm-hmm. It was a great show because the musicians were killer, and the song selection. I mean, the thing I guess I'm good at is not necessarily singing or music or playing. It's just judging the vibe of the room,
right?
And understanding where to go with it. But yeah. So they would get angry because we would just change gears all of a sudden. But I have to, because if the crowd is not feeling it. If I'm serving you dinner and you're a vegetarian and I'm giving you meat, I got to stop. I got to take the steak back and give you something else, right? Mm-hmm. I don't force it upon you and say, "Well, sorry, you know, that's what it is." So I'm changed like that. So when Lacey came in, it was.
Well, I went to go see him. He came to see the Dancing with the Stars show, and then he invited the whole cast over to his. So I came and took a video, sent it to Dancing with the Stars, and instantly he got onto it. They were like, "Yes, we need him on the show."
Right.
So once we started kind of working together and realizing that we could do so much more within just the staging of a show, that's how it really started, was, hey, can you have my players move from one side of the stage to the other? I'm like, yeah, that's totally easy. And then it started evolving into choreography.
Well, it was stuff that I've always loved. I mean, anyone who's seen us knows I'm an Elvis Presley fan, and Jerry Lee Lewis, and all the, you know, Jackie Wilson, Bobby Darin. And there was just so much excitement on stage in those days. And we've lost a lot of that, you know what I mean? Because of the way
Perfection.
The music has to be and sounding perfect and playing the exact notes. And I said, you know, I'd rather have the energy, because again, it all comes down to the vibe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather have the energy. So I started asking her, really, like, how do we get this to happen? Let me get them on wirelesses and let's make them move. So we started doing that slowly. Well, now the positive was it was going to where I wanted it to be, and she's obviously the best one to do that. The negative was that's not what all the musicians there were hired to do. Mm-hmm. So I was trying
to. We were asking them things that
they weren't ready for. It was too much to ask.
Ready for.
Well, it was just I was asking so much more than
what they were contracted
I should have
for.
Asked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Normally you put together a show like that and you say, this is what the spot is, and you audition people for that spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, you spend your life learning to play the oboe, for example.
Yeah.
You're all about the oboe.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're asked to do the samba while playing the oboe.
Yep.
Or now you need to play saxophone.
You have to get out of that. And your first response is, well, what about all my oboe experience? Can I just play the oboe?
And the cool thing was, I mean, all the musicians that I've worked with, I mean, since bars and everything, like, they're all great musicians, number one. You know, it's always trying to find a great musician. And so everyone was cool. I mean, everyone was in it. But as
we gave them options, too, like, if this is something that you're not willing to work with here.
I remember, too, Lacey, when you came in here before I asked you, I was really eager to ask you the question, can you teach somebody who has no rhythm and no dancing acumen how to dance?
Well, She taught Steve-O how to dance.
I had Steve-O, and he couldn't even hear music, let alone remember anything. So
somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just a matter of finding the way that they need to learn it.
Was Steve-O the baseline example that you use still today?
As
the project?
He's very nice, though.
Yeah, he is. Very funny. Good, great stand-up act.
No, but all the guys
doesn't have a sidestep act.
All the guys ultimately got it, but you know, some of them just weren't. It's not what they wanted to do. So you know, everyone kind of figured, well, we got to change things up, and so that's why we made a change, because I knew where I wanted it visually to go. But it's still, you know, I'm a musician. I'm sorry if you hear my bulldog snoring.
It's not your stomach. That's Stonzy.
That would be our dog under the table sleeping.
Bulldog.
She's actually.
You should add a hey bulldog to her.
She's out cold right now.
No, but so we kind of just reconfigured some stuff. And And I'll tell you what, the Smith Center thing of learning all these new songs each week has been like a college and for me too, for everyone in the band, like learning, because we got in deep. So we did like a Ray Charles night, for instance. Mm-hmm. We got in deep. The whole thing was about the influence, right? Mm-hmm. How Ray Charles influenced me.
Right.
Who influenced Ray Charles? So you start digging. Like we really did our homework each week. We had nothing else to do. We had nothing else to do. So we dig into that. And you know, Peanut Butter, my drummer, would listen to his drummer and then research his drummer. Who did he listen to? Who was who was hot at the time?
You mentioned Peanut Butter, Matt. Peanut Butter.
Yeah.
I thought he was one who really did evolve in that stretch. I don't know if it was the way he sounded on that stage or what the or what, but he was a way different musician. And well, like your guitarist. I mean, everybody developed.
Everybody has grown so much since the Smith
Center.
It's
sink or swim.
Yeah.
It
really
well, even I mean, even with Lacey, I mean, like she sang a little bit here and there, but like we made her sing in the show. I mean, it just it kind of like threw everybody on
that,
stage naked.
Once you start singing, you have to continue to sing, right?
Well, no, it just it was a comfort level push for everyone.
Well, that's a good point because you know you can feel what a musician has felt feels like
absolutely
when you're directing them to dance, right?
Absolutely. And it's the only time I've ever actually been nervous going onto a stage is holding a microphone to my mouth.
Well, that's what she said.
Oh God.
Well, that's why I made her do it so she could understand what she was doing to my guys too.
A lot of rehearsal time in that movie.
No,
right?
But the guy like Peanut Butter played with me for years, years ago, and he left. He moved back to New Orleans, so we got so tight. You know what I mean? And then he moved to New Orleans. So when he came back, we kind of started fresh, and it was all new material. Mm-hmm. So this growth of learning these new songs and getting in depth and listening. So he embraced everything the jazz drummers learned from the Ray Charles stuff, right? And then we do Elvis, so we had to learn all the Ronnie Tutt stuff. Mm-hmm. And who did Ronnie Tutt learn from? So it really just like. It was like a crash course of music.
Yeah. And it will make you better.
Nobody could have a piece of sheet music on stage. I mean, once in a while, if I was doing a song I had just wrote, I'd put a lyric sheet, kind of just like cheat sheet on my piano. But typically, there was not a note on it. It was, you know, and we hit it. And I'm not a perfectionist to say, like, for a fact that I'm a micromanager or nothing like that, but I like everything to be, if someone's paying a ticket, I want them to walk out and feel like, gave him 10
there's
times
a lot of memorization that goes on in this whole process. I mean, they say that teaching dance is a great way to combat brain dysfunction and neurological degeneration.
Yeah, memorization is what dancing is.
Exactly. And you know, can't have sheets up there. You can't have feet on the floor.
No, you can't dance
like
by
when
your
you learn,
steps.
Like when you learn the hustle.
Yeah,
you know?
No.
wait, I want to dance with you, but let me put my
first. The only thing that I kind of learned going into this, because I've worked with a lot of people on a stage before, mostly they're dancers or they have some sort of staging or theater background. But coming into this, working with his guys, none of them had that experience. Mm-hmm. So,
including me, really.
Yeah, I mean, but you knew how to move and dance and perform.
It's been 20 years since I'd taken any dance, though.
But you were the least of my issues going into this. But, you know, you kind of have to find the tricks how people learn and how, you know, some people are visual learners. Some people are physical learners. So it was definitely a challenge.
Some people like Alex, she had to hold him and he would stand on her shoes and she would walk around like, you know.
Alec is the, how old is Alec? 13? He's
I think he's like 16 now, 17.
Yeah,
no, he's going to be, I think he's going to be 19 or 20 at this point.
He's going to be 20 at the end of the month.
And he's another one that came in as a great little prodigy, very green, you know, which is what I liked about him. You even said something about him, like he reminded you of
he's young George Harrison. He looked
like
young
where
George
Harrison. He just looks uncertain.
Who was like 15 or 16 when he started playing professionally. So
he looked uncertain and he kind of came off that way, but that was what was cool. So he still has that vibe, but gosh, his playing has just gotten like...
I really think it's the Smith Center that has really developed a lot of
your
musicians.
Your
And there's a lot of pressure at that place because it's not a bar.
Yeah, it's a high caliber venue.
It's a prestigious place.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's built for music, and the people who are there
appreciate
to
appreciate it. Yeah.
They're not there because they're on their way over to the craps table at the Rush Lounge.
Which all the more reason you got to deliver. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I hear you. We got to wrap it up, guys. We're going to await word on your next big thing, whenever and however that happens. I'm at the ready. I'm sure it'll be something fantastic. The next date at Smith Center is Tuesday. It's going to be something of an all-star type jam session.
It's all the best guys in town. Parico's guys, Santa Fe's
Fat
guys,
City Horns.
Jerry Lopez,
Fat City Horns.
I think Pat Thrall's coming down to play Fat City Horns. I mean, we got a bunch of
Clint Holmes.
Clint Holmes, and a very special guest too.
Well, I'll be there too. I'll bring my oboe.
Other than you.
That's Tuesday night, and the dates are throughout the rest of the month of February and March, and then in that mix, sometime we'll have an update. But thanks, you guys, for coming down. It's Frankie Marino and Lacey Schwimmer. They are peerless, and we'll look forward to talking to them again.
We have zero peers.
Zero peers.